So, hello and welcome back to Politics Unboxed. It's been a while since we did a podcast that wasn't part of our Election Watch series, but here we are, not specifically an Election Watch, although there will be some panelists, or rather one panelist you will remember from our Election Watch series. This one is going to be all about the mini budget that the Chancellor, Kwasi Kwarteng, released. I think it was last Thursday. And there is lots and lots to run through. So, without any further ado, we're going to jump straight in to this episode of Politics Unboxed. Joining me today to fill out a four-person team for this particular unboxing, we have regular commentator Vicky. We have a new voice that you haven't heard before who's going to hopefully be writing and being on the podcast into the future, Dayan. And Harry, who was called up at very short notice because I suddenly thought, hang on, I need another point of view. Can't just have the three of us talking about the budget. So here we are. Harry, you are our ideological balance on today's show. I wonder, have you guys been looking at the reaction to the budget? Before we go into the details that's been announced, what do you think of the timing and the general feeling in the press around the announcement so far?
I guess I'll start. We can see how badly it's been reacted through the slumping of the pound, I think. It's 37-year low. I think it was, look, I looked at it this morning. It was about $1.03 for a pound. Most economists and, even the IFS director, Paul Johnson, said it was without even a semblance of effort to try and make the numbers add up. So yeah, short term, it's not looking good for the Kwarteng and Truss's start to the premiership.
I mean, I'm no economist, so budgets normally quite bore me and like mini fiscal events. So I normally just like see it happen, see the headlines, and I'm like, oh, okay, that went okay. This is probably the most dramatic reaction to any fiscal statement I think I can remember seeing. Like actually watching the like reaction that's happened, the slump in the pounds. There's some of the like more apocalyptic headlines in other papers. I'd be like, oh, okay. Which in some news ways made it more interesting for me because I much more care about the politics and the economics, just that's where my interests lie. But also slightly intimidating because, like I said, I don't necessarily understand all the economics, but it doesn't look great.
I think Rishi Sunak could be desperate to not tweet "I told you so," to be honest. I think his point of view of Trustonomics, he predicted, is unfolding, and we're seeing the reaction we're getting, which is very interesting from the former chancellor to the next, bar the one that was in for the month.
So yeah, as the panel have all really mentioned, this has probably been one of the most, how to put this, conventionally exciting fiscal events. Just if we look at the number of things that have followed it, we've briefly touched on the fall in the pound. There's been massive backlash in even conservative circles, with rumours now of letters of no confidence going in already against the Prime Minister as a result of this fiscal event and the crash of the pound that has come from it. But I think it's important to have a look and just sort of see what actually happened in this fiscal event, what was announced. So I'm just going to briefly go through a couple of things, and then we might take them point by point after I've gone through the whole list to see how people feel these ones are falling. Because the first thing that Kwasi Kwarteng announced was not really an announcement. It was just a reassurance that the statement made by the Prime Minister on the 8th of September was going to be followed through. So that's the £2,500 energy price cap freeze. Households will not be asked to pay more than £2,500 for their energy. Now, that requires a big spending commitment. So I think people were looking to the rest of this budget as to how that would be funded. Obviously, there's also support in there with energy rates for businesses as well. There isn't too much detail still on those particular plans, but we know that there is support on the way, and it is now more fleshed out than it was. But that we all sort of knew. we've found out in the days before, we've found things out, it had been drip fed, and it isn't really what's caused this particular reaction from the budget. So these are, well, the mini fiscal event. I keep calling it a budget because it feels like a budget, but there's no red box, there's no anything like that in terms of standing outside. He isn't allowed even to drink during this particular one, which is one of the quirks of parliamentary procedure. The Chancellor can have a drink in the House of Commons whilst they're presenting the budget. But in this event, we found out that the basic rate of income tax was going to be scrapped, or was going to be cut rather, not scrapped. That would have been quite an announcement to make. The basic rate falling from 20p in the pounds to 1p in the pound. Now, this was going to happen, according to Rishi Sunak's promises, by the end of this parliament. So we were looking for sort of 2024. It's now going to happen in April of 2023. On the face of it, big tax cut. That's what Kwasi Kwarteng promised, and it's what he has delivered. Also coming is a scrapping of the 45% additional top rate for high earners. Now, that's for those who earn more than £150,000 per year. This one has been slightly more controversial. It's obviously much less evenly balanced in terms of who benefits. It's only one group of people do. But I think there's plenty of time to debate the merits of this one in just a little bit. A massive trust policy was to reverse the 1.25 percentage point rise in national insurance contributions. They'd gone up from 12.5% to 13.75% under Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak. That was allegedly to pay for national health service improvements and to bolster the finances therein. But that's going to be reversed from November of this year. There was a bit of good news if you're a house buyer or a bit of a home owner, because stamp duty has, well, the exemption rate has essentially doubled. So there is no stamp duty on a property's value for the first £250,000, no matter what stage you are in your home owning career. That's up from £125,000. And for first time buyers, that number has gone from £300,000 to now no stamp duty to be paid on the first £425,000. So you can find some individual winners from this budget. Big individual winners are bankers, because no more cap on their bonus payouts, which is, again, something that has done the rounds in the news media and has been relatively controversial in terms of, we are in a cost of living crisis, is now the right time to be releasing this cap? And then there is also corporation tax. There is a planned rise, or that rather there was a planned rise to go from 19% to 25%. That is gone, staying at 19% for the foreseeable future. Just want to point a couple of caveats. The changes to income tax does not apply in Scotland, because that is a devolved issue for the Scottish government. And the changes for stamp duty only apply in England and Northern Ireland, because, again, those issues are devolved for both the Welsh Senate and the Scottish Parliament. So now that I've gone through some of the really big talking points from this budget, let's start at the top. Let's go right back to income tax. What do we think on that particular one? First off, is now the right time to be cutting income tax? Harry, we heard you mention Rishi Sunak and his criticisms of Trussonomics. He would almost certainly argue that no, now is not the time. And is this the right moment to be scoring what looks like a political own goal, judging by public perception, on that 45% top rate of tax?
Yeah, I see what you mean. I believe that was a sort of a ploy from Rishi before the next general election, because I believe it was going to go down in 2024, which is quite obvious why that was. I see what you're saying. In general, that would be quite a good thing that I'd support. But when we're sort of scrambling to find money to spend, it's not really a time to go new rights with economics when we're looking at having to prop more and more people up. Obviously you want to prop up as little amount of people as possible and help people be self-sufficient, but we're going to see this winter that's just not possible.
I mean, yeah, I agree with you. It could be a political own goal in terms of like perceptions and stuff. But I think some of the writing about it may have been slight hyperbole, just because political like analysis of elections and stuff has tended to say that, especially when they were looking at Ed Miliband's defeat and then also looking at Tory policies before that, voters care less about the tax affairs of like other people and more about how they deal in an economic circumstance. So kind of like so in isolation, cutting the tax on high earners wouldn't necessarily be the worst political move if people felt economically secure in their own position. I think in combination with other stuff, maybe that tips the balance a bit more, because then it's like one more example of the economy working for some people and not for others. But I don't think that one individual thing is necessarily going to be the thing that people are most afraid of, because I think people are, studies tend to show people are more than happy for people who earn more than them to pay less tax as long as they feel like the economy is working.
Yeah, I agree. Cutting tax, I think the idea is obviously to cut tax and to hopefully promote growth. During a cost of living crisis, it may give people more disposable income to then use to prop themselves up rather than the government intervening. But yeah, if it works, it works. Sometimes it may not work, because we know how trickle-down economics works. Give money to the top, rolls down to the bottom. People tend to disagree with it. Some people might agree with it. We've seen Tory circles that they don't support this current tax cut at the moment. But yeah, I think it's one to the future to look at.
It's definitely something that we are going to have to keep a very close eye on. Someone whose job it is essentially to keep a close eye on how the government deals with its money is the director of the IFS, the Institute for Fiscal Studies. And normally this is where I would sort of paraphrase a quote to give you the rough idea of what Paul Johnson said. But I think this has been put in such a way that it would be a shame to waste any of the language that has gone into this. So I'm going to read it word for word, and I want to see what our panel make of it. So this is a press release that was a mini budget response on the day of the mini budget. And Paul Johnson, again, the IFS director, said, "Today, the Chancellor announced the biggest package of tax cuts in 50 years without even a semblance of an effort to make the public finance numbers add up. Instead, the plan seems to be to borrow large sums at increasingly expensive rates, put government debt on an unsustainably rising path, and hope that we get better growth. This marks such a dramatic change in the direction of economic policymaking that some of the longer-serving cabinet ministers might be worried about getting whiplash." Now, that is a very forceful quote from Paul Johnson. It doesn't pull any punches in terms of how it sees what the government is doing here. Interestingly enough, the biggest package of tax cuts in 50 years, aside from this one, is almost exactly 50 years ago. Chancellor Anthony Barber and the Barber boom which followed, which we may well get onto a little bit later on. But what does a statement like that say about the confidence, at any rate, in the Chancellor's actions here? Because if the IFS are coming out essentially all guns blazing, and the final line of his statement there, Paul Johnson, ends up saying Mr. Quarting is not just gambling on a new strategy, he is betting the whole house. Does that put anybody in a confident mind around these mini budgets and how it will affect the UK economy?
I mean, it really highlights the damage to credibility of the UK about how the strength of the UK economy abroad, especially considering those quotes aren't in isolation. I was reading this morning that Bill Clinton's Treasury Secretary was also talking about this plan and how it damaged credibility and how it was even worse than he feared, and he thought it would go badly, but it's gone badly even quicker. And if you've got former Treasury Secretaries from around the world, you've got international reaction, which is what is the UK doing effectively? Like, it makes it harder, but both for like the UK economy to be seen as credible like throughout the globe, but it just also makes us like a harder partner on other stuff. Because if we can seem to just kind of do like a severe sharp turn in one direction on the economy, how can a country trust us to like not just veer off in another direction in another matter? And that just makes like solving bigger problems harder. So it's bad when we think about the mini budget in like particular, but if we look at the bigger picture, it can make things harder in lots of different areas.
It's interesting. It seems to be like the complete undoing of One Nation conservatism, which arguably under Cameron was the most stable time of these 12 years of Conservative government, despite them still being in a coalition. And I believe it was Seb Payne of The Economist who said Truss has got nothing to lose and anything to gain, because they are at their low point. So a massive gamble politically is unfortunately what she's got to do, and that's not what the economy can necessarily handle, but politically that's what she's she has to do. She's about 15 points behind Labour in the polls, especially I think YouGov, which was most accurate in 2019. She's gonna be scrambling to do anything, really.
Yeah, just to follow up, I think the word I've seen circulating in the media is unfounded. And you know, we saw Rachel Reeves mentioning earlier in the conference that they haven't seen a credible plan to grow the economy. And I think as the word gamble, it's sort of feeling like the Conservatives used to be world renowned about their pragmatism and their approach to the economy. And to use the word gamble, it sort of does highlight the fact that they might be hoping for growth.
I mean, there is certainly a lot of hope from the government on this particular issue. And at the moment, you would have to say, looking at the economic forecasts and the economic situation that has resulted from this, hope is very much needed. Without stepping too far over into either political side, there is a lot that needs to go right for this gamble to pay off. By the government's own analysis, this tax cut, the overall tax cutting measures that Kwasi Kwarteng announced, could cost £2 billion. The IFS agree that the government might have got their numbers right in that regard, but they also say that there is a chance that the government have got their numbers wrong. And if they get their numbers wrong, then the only way that that number is going to go is it's going to get bigger. And that is going to be the number that we're going to have to make up as a country in some way, shape or form. I remember back to the 2010 election campaign when David Cameron and George Osborne were going around, and then just after it, there was the note that was left in the Treasury buildings. This very famous, some have said it was obviously just a joke between civil servants and or SPADs. Some have said, no, this was a credible admission that there really was no money left. But the note just read, there's no money left, sorry. Are we getting to the stage where if there's a change of government in 2024, the Truss government might be having to leave similar levels of notes? Or are we miles and miles off that and I need to be stopped from speculating any further because I clearly don't know what I'm talking about?
I'll go. I think from 12 years of government, they've learned not to leave notes like that again. Because I believe it was a long-running joke, but it's just been piledrived against. Is it Liam Byrne? I think was the minister at the time. So I think they've learned not to keep up that trend. But I think it in a year's time, it will start to be clear whether they'll need to leave a note like that or not. Because as we say, it's such a gamble. We certainly can't predict, and I don't think people whose job it is to predict can at the moment.
I mean, yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I think it's probably too soon to say, maybe wait a couple of weeks to see where the market settles. Everything's just in kind of flux at the moment. If the announcement, I think we're going to hear a medium term financial plan at some point. I think it was November. I may be lying about that. No, it was November. So maybe that will help. They can kind of get things back kind of on a more stable footing. But I don't have to, yeah, I agree. It's too early to tell.
I do just want to very quickly come up on that point that you mentioned, Vicky, about the medium term statement. It's in November. Okay. Fair enough. They want to wait a little bit of time to see what is going on. But I've got on my screen in front of me that the pound is now at $1.075. It's at, I mean, it's falling against most currencies in the general trend of the last week. In the last couple of days, it's seeming to mount a bit of a recovery. But people have been eviscerated and excoriated in the press for betting against what was labelled UK PLC. I believe that was the Mail's headline, blaming bankers for sort of shorting the pound in some circumstances. Is November potentially too late? Will Kwasi Kwarteng even be Chancellor by then? Because we've seen these rumours flying around that he's got about a week to save his treasury lifespan. So I just wonder whether you might think that November could be a little too late for a medium term, or whether you think that's the time they need to properly assess it.
I mean, I think if you were just doing it on like an economic plan and weren't taking politics into account, that November might be, early November could probably be like a decent time to do a midterm plan or a medium term plan. Politically, I'm not sure that will work, because I mean, I think rumours about no confidence votes may be a bit far-fetched, but I can definitely see a scenario where Tory MPs want him to go and take the fall and a new Chancellor in place, and that's kind of like who they can blame and move on from. The backbenchers definitely didn't look that happy during his mini financial statements. It wasn't a kind of like roaring reception to it, and they haven't looked that happy since or comfortable talking about it. So I can definitely think maybe he won't be around to give it, but November isn't necessarily the worst time to do it.
There's been a lot made in the media quite recently, and for very obvious reasons, of potential comparisons between Liz Truss and Margaret Thatcher. Every time a Conservative Prime Minister stands at the dispatch box, they are always compared to Margaret Thatcher, and it just helps that Liz Truss is also female, although some would say that Margaret Thatcher was the only man in her cabinet. I think there is a more worrying parallel that should be being drawn for the Liz Truss government, and isn't at the moment, though. And that is with the Ted Heath government. And I'll tell you for why. The 50-year gap between the two most tax-cutting budgets for decades when they were announced, one of them was Kwasi Kwarteng's budget, or mini-budgetary statement of a week ago. The other was from Anthony Barber, Ted Heath's chancellor, in 1972. Bang on 50 years. There are some other parallels as well. And if you've read the article that I put up on Politics Unboxed yesterday, you will possibly know some of these parallels. There was also a flagging economy. There was also an energy crisis. We were about to hit the OPEC scenario. There was a bit of industrial unrest. I don't think anyone can forget how the RMT and current unions are on strike, and they certainly couldn't in the 70s. Barber then cut taxes in a measure not seen for years, if not decades. There are striking parallels. Kwasi Kwarteng will hope that his budget or his statement doesn't have the same outcome, because whilst the budget from Anthony Barber did create what was known as the Barber boom, it was a very short-term boom. And after that, the British economy had to wrestle with the stagflation, where the economy is not growing, but inflation is still creeping up and up. and an economic maelstrom involving industrial unrest, resulting in a three-day week, a miners' strike, and then a wage price spiral, which really put the mockers on the UK economy. Now, this is not me saying that that is going to happen, but the last time we saw anything like this, that is what happened. Can Liz Truss steer her government at the moment from a position where she needs to take, as Harry, I think you said, she needs to take some form of gamble in order to chase Keir Starmer in the polls? But can she navigate this potentially very dangerous and very shark infested waters to keep the ship of state afloat?
Well, to continue on metaphors, it's almost like the ship's going down anyway. So she may go down on the ship, but she may survive if the sharks don't notice her, in a very basic return. But it almost seems like she has to swim through the sharks to get to the other side. And there could be a big gold chest on the island, or a Labour government for her, which would be an emphatic swing away from a 80-seat majority we saw 3 years ago. Which would be 1997 levels for sure. Maybe not 417 to 167, but a swing of 100 the other way. And so, yeah, she needs to change something because the polls aren't yet going up for her. And normally there is some sort of new promise to bounce, especially in a time where the Queen has passed and her formality could help her reunite or just unite the country. As Boris received at the beginning of the pandemic in March 2020, which of course dwindled and dwindled from then, but we've not even seen that uptake yet.
Yeah, I think it's going to be incredibly difficult for her to crawl back from the, I think it was 17 points or 15 points that Labour were polling. I think most people have discovered over the past 2 years, 3 years, especially with Boris Johnson's cabinet and himself as a personality, that there are issues, I think, within the Conservative Party. I think that they're fracturing amongst themselves, I think. And yeah, it's not this situation is not going to make it easy for her. No, I think uncertainty is already high. And even think in as well as the mini budget thing, or it's not mini budget, it's the budget itself. I think the governments are actually fighting against the Bank of England as well. Bank of England trying to increase interest rates. I think it was 5 to 6% that they were estimating. So she also has to contend with that as well, which is not going to make it easy. So yeah, it's going to be difficult, but I don't see that she will be able to make it, really.
Yeah, it's an interesting position. I'd agree with both of those statements. I mean, she keeps talking about how she's happy to make unpopular decisions at the right thing, but cutting taxes should be a popular decision for a Conservative Prime Minister. And the fact that that hasn't helped her kind of shows the extent of the problem she's in. And it's not just that it's caused her problems. I know that the National Trust, alongside the RSPC, the RSPB, have issued the most hardline statement I think I've seen a National Trust issue in quite some time. And considering the parallel between the National Trust membership and what I imagine is Conservative membership, I think there's probably some crossover there. And you've got the National Trust emailing its members to be like, this is awful, please, like, go to the streets, effectively. Like, she's going to end up being attacked at all fronts. And the fact that she hasn't got that solid support amongst membership, the leadership elect contest was closer than they thought it would be in the end. She hasn't got a majority of her MPs. I think it looks very shaky.
I think this rolls into potentially a wider argument and a wider problem for Liz Truss as well. And I want to just briefly ask what could potentially be a very difficult question to Harry. What does a big C Conservative look like nowadays? Not a small C, because we know that that's sort of small state, low taxes, the sort of Oakeshottian version of how a Conservative should look. But the actual party, Is there a unified idea? Is there a, everyone's lining up to go back to the One Nation days or the Thatcherite days? Or is it just that there have been so many different leadership positions over the last, what, if we go back to David Cameron's 6 years of four different prime ministers, that there is so much divergence on what it means to be a part of the Conservative Party anymore?
Yeah, I think the attempt of healing from the fact that the Brexit votes occurred in the party did just create some more rifts, especially where we've seen the new intake of MPs under Boris Johnson shift to the right. And there's sort of the 21 MPs that lost the whip in September 2019, only three remain, one of them being my MP. And all of them face Liberal Democrat opposition, funnily enough. So I think that's why they were kept, essentially. But yeah, I think there was closer to connect between the Conservatives of 2010 to 2015 and the Liberal Democrats of 2010 to 2015 than the most left and most right, dare I say, of the party, because you have some people sort of verging on blue kip, as a phrase. I won't name names because I could be here debating that forever, but the same as, you know, the more long-standing people but would be close to the centre of a time that they're so well-versed in government policy, they're just doing government policy, dare I say, but from a less reactionary way of doing it.
Because, I mean, that whole sort of nebulous idea of what a Conservative should look like is posing a bit of an issue for Liz Truss, because traditionally you would probably have to agree that tax cutting is conservative. It is what Conservatives do when they get into government. It's always tended to be that the Conservatives paint themselves as the party of fiscal responsibility, cutting taxes and lowering the burden on the state, and then they are trying to paint the Labour Party as a party that has higher tax rates, but the Labour Party would say, well, that may well be so, but it's justified because of all the other things we can do in a social aspect because of it. I wonder now, given this mini budget statement has come out, how on earth the Conservatives can maintain the label of fiscal responsibility if the gamble doesn't pay off, which is looking like the more likely outcome. If the cost of all of these social projects that still need to happen, we still haven't solved what Theresa May was talking about with the just about managings when she came into Downing Street. We haven't solved Boris Johnson's social care crisis that he talked about on the steps of Downing Street. There are so many promises that need to be funded from both the 2019 manifesto and Liz Truss's 2022 campaign. And the tax revenue is going down. So are we going to be paying off this debt for generations? Is that going a bit too far, possibly into hyperbole? But are we going to be looking back and thinking, well, hang on, no, now it's the Conservative Party that borrow to spend rather than what might have been seen as a Labour way of doing things?
I mean, we record this as Keir Starmer's just given his speech, right? He was outlining some big plans at party conference. And I think you probably can see a scenario where a Labour government gets in with all these big plans and goes, ah, we can't really do any of these because we then have to just hike up tax and pay for like borrowing. It's already happened under Conservatives, and like sort that out in a kind of what Cameron and Osborne said they had to do when they got in, similar kind of scenario. I don't know if generations is hyperbole. I suppose someone's got to pay it off at some point. So, and it's not going to be under Liz Truss. Well, it doesn't seem like it's going to be under Liz Truss. So who knows?
I think that's a very interesting point that you raised about how the Labour Party might have to go into government if indeed the polls are correct and they do win the 2024 general election or find themselves in power because of it. Obviously, we know that there are a couple of things they plan to do. They will reverse that additional top rate of tax abolition, really. So the 45% top level is back if Labour Party get into power. That's polling very well, actually, in terms of keeping that on such a high level of income. I have the figures to hand somewhere, but I think it's just under 5 times the average income in the United Kingdom, £150,000 a year, which when it's put like that, I think that there's a strong public support for reinstating that tax bracket. But that's sort of by the by. Labour has now planned this publicly owned renewable energy company, Great British Energy, sort of an EDF of Britain. There is the possibility that the Labour Party tries to get into power as almost the Blairite management of the economy, but then can't do it because of the underlying financial situation. What we do know is that Gary Neville might well be sitting on a select committee for the sports DCMS if Labour do get into it. Maybe he'll accept a position in the Lords and try and do some politics with his football punditry. We know he was at Labour conference. He was a guest speaker. I didn't think I'd see the day when Gary Neville was speaking from the stage at Labour Party conference and giving interviews as a high profile Labour backer. But I think it just goes to show that the curious carousel of electoral politics in the United Kingdom. Kwasi Kwarteng has made his pitch. I must say, one of the funnier headlines I saw was Honey, I've Shrunk the Quids. That, I think, was very good knowledge of your audience from a journalistic point of view. I believe that was either the Star or the Mirror. And it was, they knew their audience very, very well. Vicky's just confirmed it was the Mirror in the end there. But I really do wonder about the next few weeks, the next few months, and the run up to this general election, because we often do see an outlay of spending promises in the run up to a general election. It does seem to be the electoral cycle. You go through, in a typical 5-year term, you might well see a little bit of inherited growth in the first year, then it might drop down in years 2 and 3, and in year 4 and 5, it'll be building up growth and then trying to spend more into the economy. We are now approaching that year 4 and 5, and if Rishi Sunak's economic assessment and analysis is to be believed from when he was talking about things on the campaign trail for leader of the party, the money isn't there to fund them at the moment without reaching into borrowing and pushing potentially the national debt well above that 100% of GDP. So as sort of almost a final reflection on this mini budgetary statement, I wanted to ask the whole panel, and we'll go one at a time rather than the whole panel at once, but I'm not sure who wants to kick this off, because it's going to be a fun question. This is all about predictions. Now, anybody who tells you for certain that they know what is going to happen is either a liar or is deluding themselves, because that is simply impossible. And it's why so many people took umbrage with George Osborne's, I think it was £4,236 per household per year, he said that they were going to lose because of Brexit. And it's why it's very difficult to put a proper political prediction into focus. But I want to see what you guys think is going to happen. First off, with the wider economy, which is not looking particularly healthy as we speak, with the level of the pound and a general lack of confidence in the UK markets. What's going to happen with Kwasi Kwarteng? Is he going to be the Chancellor by the time he gets to make this planned medium run statement? And then finally, is this Liz Truss's Black Wednesday event, the thing that cripples confidence in the Conservative custodianship of the economy? It did it for John Major after a long period in government. He never really got himself back on his feet after 1992 and the ERM debacle. Is this Liz Truss's Black Wednesday? I don't know who wants to go first on that one, and I don't know in how many parts you want to try and answer that question. But feel free to answer all of it, some of it, as much as you can.
Okay, I'll have a go. In terms of what is going to happen with the economy, I think we're either going to see a U-turn of some regards when the government has to kind of show their figures at some point of how they're going to do this, or we see the Chancellor go. I think in either of those scenarios, Liz Truss looks both like she's, her instincts, political instincts aren't good because her first policy platform went down really badly, and then also looks weak because she's had to backtrack or sack a Chancellor and bend to the will of her party. And then she just kind of like limps on until 2024 when the Conservatives lose. And that is part of a defining part of it and defines maybe Liz Truss, but isn't necessarily the only reason. And anger at Boris Johnson and that whole debacle still kind of plays a part into it. But the fact, like this, so basically, I think this might define Liz Truss, but might not be the sole reason of a Conservative loss.
I think it's very difficult to predict anything nowadays. We don't know what's going to happen with the war in Ukraine. I think that's had a massive factor into everything that's occurring. It's you can never predict what's going to happen in British politics. As you mentioned earlier, Gary Neville, he just made a random appearance out of nowhere. We know he was very critical of Boris Johnson. Who else? Which other footballer we might see? One might join the Conservatives. You never know. But yeah, Kwarteng wants to focus on growth, and it's looking very unlikely that growth will occur. We'll see. I think in the long term, maybe in 3 months' time after Christmas, so when everything's gone up through the winter as well. We don't know how bad the winter's going to be. We don't know what's going to happen then. I'm not saying anything. I want to backtrack to it's going to be extremely hard to predict whatever's going to happen.
Yeah, I also just can't predict what's going to happen. I just pray that someone in the halls of government knows something that meant this was all plausible in the end, but there's no sign of that just yet. In a strangely cynical way, I think the fact that there could be all sorts of fallout from the American elections and the Italian elections could suddenly swing back that they're negative to our benefit in a very strange way. That may make no sense whatsoever. But with Italy, they could just pull out of everything now, and America looking like it's going to be quite Republican in November. It could be a completely different conversation in a month, and we didn't even have Liz Truss a month ago. And, you know, to have a Black Wednesday 19 days in will be very, very impressive. And I think looking forward to the election, I'm not looking forward to it. I think the government will probably be kept in by the fact that the SNP have about 50 seats, which doesn't allow Labour to get the majority they need. But that's just my opinion on that.
I think certainly the game of estimations and predictions is a game I've played and lost on a number of occasions, but what the hell, I'm going to play it again. Let's see if any of it comes good. I think the economy right now, we are hopefully hitting the bottom of a short-term shock. I think there will be some short-term recovery, and it depends on what the Bank of England are going to do. They could step in, heavy-handedly, they could step in gently. But they are going to step in at some point, because right now we are bouncing along the dangerous level of parity with the dollar, which, given how much of a competitive nature we have to have with them over several services anyway, if the dollar suddenly becomes the better currency to hold, you could see financial services think, well, hang on, they're both out of the European Union at the moment. Why would we go to the one with the weaker central currency? So I think there will be some form of intervention from the Bank of England, but I don't think it will be good enough to promote any medium to long term growth based on what I can see happening from these plans. Yes, there are individual winners, homeowners, people who like drinking beer because they froze beer duty again, which personally I found quite appealing, but it's not enough to bring everything back to achieve the growth that we've been looking for. I think the mini budget looks increasingly like this reheated cut tax, cut state system that just isn't going to work in this current economic climate when people are crying out for help already and help is being promised at record levels, especially with the level of public engagement at the moment. People saw how the government dropped everything and acted in a time of national crisis over COVID. And fair play to the government in the first couple of months. Nobody had any issues with what the government was doing, because that action, that freeing up of funds, the inaction of furlough, they were good, sensible policies for that time. But you can't put the genie back in the bottle. That old "where's the money going to come from" argument doesn't work anymore, or it won't work for this election cycle, which is why it's going to be very difficult for Kwasi Kwarteng to say, well, no, we have to cut taxes and we have to cut spending, which is why I think he will not last the duration of the Liz Truss government, however long that lasts. Is this Truss's ERM Black Wednesday? Well, I think it's already undermined confidence in her stewardship of the economy as an administration, because surely something this big had to have been at least talked about in terms of potential negative consequences. And if this wasn't one of the consequences that they could have seen, well, then, not to put too fine a point on it, but they need to hire better economists to do their analysis for them. Because something of this size doesn't go unnoticed in predictions unless you have a complete blind spot to it. So this could very well be Truss's economic Black Wednesday. Whether or not that means that she's out of office in the next election, whether or not that means Keir Starmer can get into office in the next election, again, it will all depend on our complicated, convoluted political system and our first past the post method, which may well save some respectability in an election result for the Conservatives. But I think if this was proportional representation, we would be looking at the Conservatives quite clearly out of office in 2024. But that is a way off. And hopefully there are going to be plenty of things that we can cover in between now and then. Things that are definitely on the way, as Harry so kindly brought to my attention, the midterm elections in America. We have the Italian election. We have the Brazilian federal elections very, very soon. The midterms, however, quick promo for Expression FM News, because the 8th of November, there will be a special show to go through the night, essentially, talking about what is going to be happening with those midterms. So do tune in if you need your dose of electoral politics. If you can't wait till then, we'll go back through the archives, have a listen to some election watches. Get in touch. If you want to get in touch, go to @politics.unboxed on Instagram, politicsu on Twitter, and politicsunboxed on Facebook, or email at politics.unboxed@outlook.com. If you want to include a pitch, well, then just tell us. If there's something we've missed, tell us. Always happy to hear what you have to say. I want to thank all three of my fellow contributors. Thank you to Vicky. Thank you to Dayan and Harry. Thank you very much for coming on at such short notice. I think it might be the shortest notice I've ever given anyone for a podcast, but you've all spoken very well on the issues. And I think we've given a decent enough appraisal of the situation that is going on. There's a lot still to be left unknown, and that's why I would completely recommend that you follow Politics Unboxed and go to www.politicsunboxedpodcast.wordpress.com, where you can subscribe for regular articles about the major issues. But thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and until next time, I hope you have a very good day.